The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Looking forward into 2026, we'd all love to plan for a much happier, more contented year than the one we've just left. Well, to help us achieve that, we're joined by Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Pat. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. So let's talk about these science-backed initiatives. In other words, science tells us these work.
Exactly. In other words, we can stand over them. We have the research to show that these things help our mental well-being. And I suppose the reason I'm bringing these today is they aren't huge life changes. They are tweaks on what you are possibly already doing. But it is a way of checking yourself and to think about what can work for you. And the first of these, so I have a list of nine, and they come from a BBC article, actually, which I just thought was hitting the nail on the head. And I really liked it. And the first up is perfectionism. I would see this endlessly. Perfectionism, we know from research, really leaves people far more psychologically inclined to have difficulties. And in fact, the research shows that the more perfectionistic you are, the more likely you are to have all kinds of disorders like anxiety, depression, and all of that. So if you are inclined to be perfectionistic, you really do need to tackle that. And the way to tackle it is to work towards kind of a self-compassion. There are many little apps out there that will help you with that. I would suggest to people to start questioning why they are perfectionistic and to work back towards a much more gentle way with themselves. If they don't do that, they will move towards burnout. It's incremental and it will eventually blindside you. So it's just one tick on the box there. Perfectionism, have a look at it.
Okay, number two.
The second one is better friendships. Well, I know I go on and on and on about connection, but we know that connection is a huge part of our mental well-being. So having good social bonds, we've all the research, 80-year-long studies to show this. So if you, but there's the physical effect as well that, you know, if you don't have positive relationships, you can have quite a bit more stress in your life and a lot more inflammation in your body. And here's another really important point. It's not just having friendships and connections. It's the quality of them. If you have this kind of inconsistent support or a toxic kind of relationship, that is shown to be really very bad for your health. Therefore, you need to check the kinds of friends you're keeping, if you like. Okay. And we've talked about that a number of times.
Number three might be obvious. Find a hobby.
Find a hobby. And the reason to say this is not just that, maybe just to point out the mental health aspect of it, which is that it distracts you from life. It distracts you from problems. It gives your mind a rest. That is why hobbies are important, not just because there's a cardiovascular effect and there's all sorts of other effects, but I'm giving you the mental well-being effect. And it is distraction from stress. It builds friendships. And there is something else about, you know, exercising with somebody. And it is that you get this sense of this shared intention, which is that even your exercise feels easier. And it's obviously easier then to make connections because you understand each other. So you get a kind of a double hit with hobbies and shared activities.
Now, the next one is to use your anger constructively. How do I do that?
Yes, well, that's about really, you know, not expressing the anger in a, you know, in an aggressive way. And obviously, there's many, you know, you could say little caveats with this, but just this principle that you can use your anger in a constructive way. If something has really, you know, got on top of you and has sparked your anger, that you can, you know, use it into, say, for example, sport. You can use it in to be creative. You can control it. But in order to do that, instead of letting it all build up in your physical self, you have to create a little distance, you have to create a little pause, and you have to find a way of using it. So I know it's the old count to 10, but the count to 10 is a little phrase that I find myself using quite a lot, you know, in guiding people in their work, in my work. It is to hold that. What else can you do with that? I mean, that doesn't mean you're not acknowledging who or what made you angry, but it is that you use that anger and you do not let it sit in your body, because it's known that anger really does, you know, place a risk on your cardiovascular health.
The next one is about being grateful for what you have. And so many people, they don't appreciate how misfortunate other people are compared to them.
Yes. Well, gratitude, this comes really, gratitude, sometimes people feel this is a little bit patronizing. I see it much more as a searching for the positive in your day, because the research has been shown that if on studies where people sat down every evening for 1 month and wrote down three things that they were grateful for in the day, or that they felt was really important to them, and why they were grateful for it. In other words, what it meant to them, their mood lifted and depressive symptoms decreased. So that was over a 1 month study. So what I'm saying is, focus not, it's not the act of gratitude as gratitude, but it's also the searching for the good. That is key to this practice. Searching for the good, recognizing it, acknowledging it, and also searching through yourself, in your physical self and your emotional self, to see, why do I like this? Why do I value this? The beautiful day. Why do I value it? Because, you know, it could be grey. We know it's often grey. It's evaluating it in yourself. The results on that study are absolutely way beyond what anybody ever expected. And anybody who is low, I do move them towards that. Now, it's not going to move people out of serious psychiatric depression. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about tipping the scales in your favour.
Now, you should set up your phone to work for you. How do you do that?
Yes, well, I think it's really just, we know a lot about what smartphones and all of this overexposure to phones is doing to people. Do you know that in the States, the average number of times that people pick up their phone in a day is 186? That's a lot. That's the average. Okay, now we know there's outliers there. And I think in Ireland, I saw a thing recently over the Christmas, actually, that we are the most engaged in all of Europe. I think we are very married to our smartphones, and we need to watch that. I have to say, it's an intention of my own for the new year, because it does, you know, reduce your attention span. As we know, it can affect your sleep. It can increase anxiety. We know that different in different groupings. But I would say, start being really proactive in how you use it, and turning it off and having space from it. People are smart enough to do that. But it's probably important to know that there's some research to show that if you use your notes on your screen, your sort of notes app, that has been shown to improve people's performance on different tasks. So you can make it work for you, but take control of it. I suppose that's what I'm saying.
There are a few more. Embrace the gloomy winter days. In other words, accept it's winter, and let's get out there and enjoy the bracing sharp frost or whatever it might be.
Yes.
An unlikely one, sing to make you feel better.
Yes. Okay. So I'll be very quick on this, but the key on the accepting winter is, you mustn't resist. You must accept. You know, this is an uncontrollable. So it's a lot of research out there, particularly in Norway, to show that when people look forward to the winter, the cozy nights, the cozy jumpers, the warm drinks, the watching movies, this mitigates the negative feelings. But if you keep resisting it and saying, I hate the long days, I hate the short days, I hate the long nights, and you keep at that and you keep telling yourself that, you're sending yourself spirally downwards. Singing is huge. There's huge endorphin releases in singing, but it's also this feeling of being connected. So there's a few things that really regulates your stress response, because remember, you're also controlling your breath when you're breathing. Sorry, when you're singing, and especially if you're in a choir. So it is the kind of the neurons being kicked off, but also this controlled breathing that makes singing an extra special kind of stress reliever.
Stephanie, there we will leave it. Thank you very much for joining us. Stephanie Regan is clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.